You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You're listening to the Companion Gundog Podcast. I'm your host, Grayson Geyer. With me today is Landon Poplin of Wirehair Outdoors. Landon, how you doing?
Good. How are you, man?
I'm good. Thanks for being here today. I really appreciate it. For those of you that are kind of regular podcast listeners, you may recognize Landon's name from a recent episode with Nick Adair. And we've been lucky enough to get him in here, and we're going to expand on some of the things Landon went into with Nick. And so for those unfamiliar with Landon, he is a player in the HRC game with his wire hair Harker. So Landon, again, thanks for being here.
Yes, sir.
Tell us a bit about your, you know, just your backstory, if you don't mind, and kind of up to the point where you got Harker and got started in this stuff.
Sure. So been a diehard waterfowler since I was 12. Had a few dogs here or there, and started in the pointing world with a couple short hairs, and they passed on. So I did a lot of research for a couple years and decided I was going to get a wire hair so I could play both sides of the game with the waterfowl and upland.
Gotcha.
And ended up getting Harker from a local guy in Boonville, North Carolina.
Okay. So so those short hairs prior, were you hunting birds with them at all?
Yeah, just goofing off and at home around the, you know, thickets. And
Gotcha. So you know, we talked a lot about the, I guess, your passion being primarily pointed towards waterfowl.
Yes.
And so what kind of, you know, when I think waterfowl, and I'm sure you've heard this from many other people, I think about the retriever breeds. What got you thinking wire hair, knowing that your primary focus was going to be duck and goose hunting?
Just upon the research of different breeds, I wanted something versatile.
Gotcha.
And cause I did want to get back into the upland games.
Okay.
Just, you know, more technical, actually realizing how to train a dog properly in the upland world. And, but I also wanted to, you know, fulfill my passion with the waterfowl.
Sure.
And the wire hair just checked all those boxes for me.
So even today, like, I mean, in a normal hunting season, you know, are you more of your, I'm assuming more of your attention still gets focused at the waterfowl, is that right?
For my pleasure, yes.
Sure. Are you now, how many days do you think a season are you hunting out there?
Last year I hunted 47 out of 60.
I'd say you're doing
and
pretty solid for your pleasure.
This year that's going to change with my new job.
Sure.
So I'll hunt on my days off, but that's fine.
That's fair. Are you still getting down to the coast very much to hunt, or are you hunting mostly around home?
Mostly around home.
Yeah.
And the last couple of years, Chesapeake hadn't iced up, so we don't get birds.
Yeah. Same kind of deal here. We're lucky in this little pocket we get. We get some big ducks. We obviously get our wood ducks to shoot, especially in the early season. But yeah, I would say, you know, for us, I'm kind of a pot hunter, man. I take what I got access to. I spent a lot of my duck hunting days turning into squirrel hunting days.
I've killed plenty of squirrels duck hunting.
Yeah. So, but that's, you know, that's cool. So I think I get a lot of clients that bring me, you know, whatever versatile breed. Oftentimes, you know, they've done their research. They're interested in NAVDA. But many of them will tell me, hey man, my primary focus is waterfowl. And I think it'd be cool to have the opportunity to go bird hunting with my dog if I wanted to. And when I say bird hunting, I'm talking upland, you know, right. species. And I think a lot of folks get into it that way. And so what I find interesting in your story is you're a guy that went that route and has had a lot of success in the traditional retriever game, one of the traditional retriever games, which is HRC.
Right.
And so I want to kind of break that down a little bit. And if so, for those out there that are listening, that are, you know, that are avid duck hunters that like the idea of having maybe an off breed. And I think you see much more of that these days. I see a lot more short hairs, wire hairs, poodle pointers. I've got one poodle pointer here that picks up hundreds of ducks a year and rarely gets to go bird hunting.
Right.
You know, so those out there that are interested in that, I think the traditional wisdom has been, and I've told many people this, just go get your lab, you know, and people that have listened to the podcast have probably heard me say that. But here's an outlier. Here's a guy that got his wire hair, and went out and played the HRC game, takes the dog duck hunting. You've got a HRCH, and
yes,
you're qualified. Obviously, I think that qualifies. Once you get an HRCH, if I'm, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, you're qualified to go to the Grand forever.
That's right.
At that point. Okay.
That's right.
And I think that's cool. So it gives you an incentive to continue playing the game. And I know from your talking to you in the past, like you can, you know, once you've achieved your finished title, you don't have to quit. You can keep collecting points. Is that correct? Okay. So for those unfamiliar with the HRC game, we're not going to, you know, dig into the nuance of what that is, but it stands for Hunting Retriever Club. It does have quite a big following in our neck of the woods. We've got several tests available to us. You could stay busy with it.
Oh,
I'd say pretty much all testing season and never really leave a 3 or 4 state area.
No, I mean, I personally have 3 coming up, 3 weekends in a row, and then I have a break, and then we go straight to the Grand.
Yeah. So that's, I think for me, that's one thing I've always struggled with is I tend to play games that like I have to travel really far for. And so one thing, and I'd like to play more in HRC and you know, my friend Emily, who you guys are all familiar with, has handled my lab, through her season title, and her upland hunter title. And, you know, so for me, I'd like to continue her to get to her finished title and I'll keep working in that direction. But and with a family, it makes more sense for me to stick close to home. So that's something I can put my attention into. I'm not quite sure I have a pointing dog that's ready to challenge the HRC. I might take some of my Brittany's to like a started test. I think that could be fun, but anything beyond that, you know, I'm not sure and we're going to get into why. But I'm not sure I'd want to challenge them in too much more technical retriever type work.
Right.
So you got Harker, with the idea of, you know, you're primarily a waterfowl guy. At what age did you start gearing him up towards technical retrieving work and how did you go about that?
He was probably too young, to be honest.
Sure.
So he was probably a year old.
Okay.
When we started really hammering on things as trying to push him towards finish level work.
Gotcha.
Because I think he had started and season knocked out by right at a year old.
That's a major accomplishment. A lot of folks, you hear that. I mean, I see a lot of folks kind of get to things early, but if you have an opportunity to play the game every weekend, you might as well go play the game. I'm thinking, let's start from the beginning. So you got Harker, and you and I have discussed this in a little bit. When did you find HRC and when did you start really saying, okay, I'm going to start training towards these titles?
My Harker was 12 weeks when I got him and I just started pilling around and just seeing that he just had a crazy retrieve drive.
Gotcha.
Whether it's ball, bumper, frozen bird, it didn't matter. He was picking it up and bringing it back.
From the word go. Always wanted to bring it back.
Yeah.
Boy, that's nice.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say it several times, but he's definitely the once in a lifetime dog for me. And
sure.
Just makes everything easy until we got into the handling aspect. And that just took a little of my own learning and talking to different pros and, you know, kind of tweaking what they're saying about a retriever and, you know, twisting and turning that and making it fit to my wire hair.
Gotcha. So for those unfamiliar with like retriever terms, when we're talking handling in, traditionally in the retriever games, you know, we want to start with our dog watching birds fall out of the sky or potentially running blind retrieves, but we need to be able to direct them in the field. So a lot of times, you know, when we think of that, that's hand signals, maybe a little bit of verbal cues, stopping right. the dog on the whistle remotely out in front of us. You know, and so not to take up too much time on this, but at the started level, there's not really any handling requirements, right? They're just picking up marks. So, you know, so if we want to just say, hey, I got a dog that can watch a duck fall out of the sky, run out there and grab it, that started. In the season level, we're starting to run blind retrieves.
Right.
So in the American tradition of retriever training, that usually, in my opinion, begins with the force fetch.
Right.
So we're going to take our dog through that force progression, kind of a Rex Carr style of force program. So force fetch, getting them on the ground, force to pile,
right.
single T, maybe double T if you're into that, swim bys, things like that.
That's right.
So we've gone through all this with Harker. At what age did you start the force fetch process?
Force fetch, he was 6 months.
Okay.
And just got his adult teeth.
And that was your first dog force fetching, correct?
Yes, sir.
How do you feel like that process went?
It's pretty intimidating. It's like it is for everybody, but sure. I had plenty of pros to call and, you know, give them a scenario and, you know, if he was fighting me on something, you know, they would kind of direct me how to take care of that, whether it's an ear pinch or toe hitch.
Gotcha.
Ear pinch worked great for sure. Harker. So,
yeah, I mean, and I think, you know, my personal opinion on that is that it's good to have all the contact points you can. You know, the principles right. remain the same, right? It's negative reinforcement, whether we're delivering it from the ear or from the toe. And so all my dogs that go through a force program will see it all.
Right.
And I think it's important. It's valuable. And there's certain things you get from a toe hitch that are good and certain things you get from an ear pinch that are good. And then when you make that collar and ground transition, you got something to lean on,
exactly.
you know, if you need to get to it. But, so we got them on the table, we got them off the table. You had pros and experienced people to help direct you with that. Forced to pile, nice and clean. You feel like that all went good. By this time, are you going to club on a regular basis or?
Most of the time.
Okay.
Yeah. My friend Colt Simmons, he helped me train a lot and we followed the retriever trainer program pretty heavily.
Freddie King's
yeah. methods. Yes.
I'm still a subscriber.
Oh yeah.
I'm a big, I would say bang for your buck. There's nothing better out there.
I think it's $60 for the year or something.
Yeah.
So I mean, you can message him and usually within a couple of hours he's replying to you. Yeah.
So there's a free plug for Freddie King. I don't think I'll ever relinquish my subscription to that just because I think it's a great value and I haven't looked at it probably in 2 years,
right.
but I think it's worth supporting, you know,
oh, yeah.
and I want him to keep doing that just in case I ever run into a problem one day. I know I got it to lean on. Right. I can go back and look through that stuff.
I reference those videos if I'm out of ideas and sure. the pros that I talk to on a regular basis are out of ideas, I'll go back and I might see a little snippet in a video like, oh, he kind of does it a little different this way. So let me go like that afternoon or tomorrow and try that little, whatever little technique it may have been.
I think better, you know, more than anything else I've ever read or had access to video wise, what I like about Freddie King is like, number one, he's just a very like laid back, do it yourself kind of guy. He's a great dog trainer.
Oh yeah.
But I don't have like tech water here. I don't have people to help me. And he really gears that thing towards like guys like me that don't leave, you know, I can travel to go train my pointing dogs.
Right.
But if I'm piddling with my retrievers, it's going to be the farm pond in my backyard and whatever I got access to. And he does right. a good job of showing you how to give your dog really technical looks with very simple setups.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, I like that. So we know Harker's got a bunch of ball drive, which is key, which right. is rare. Well, I wouldn't say it's rare. It's not always common with pointing breeds. So for those people out there looking into it, let's talk a little bit about Harker's genetic makeup. What do you know anything about the lines he came from?
It's a lot of names I can't pronounce from Germany.
So that's, I think that's kind of getting to the point I wanted to make anyway, which is this is he's essentially a DD bred dog, even though we didn't keep him registered in the VDD.
Correct.
Which as a libertarian American, I'm completely okay. Not only okay with, I fully support, but I do understand. I think the German program has a lot of merit, and I think it produces really nice dogs. And I think one thing I see out of DDs and even Kurtzars or whatever else is a propensity to ball drive.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and so where you're not, you may not see it in dogs from American lines as much, that they're just willing to go out in the backyard. If you throw a bumper, they want to engage you over the bumper. Right. They want to play. And so we can kind of nitpick the details of what you can expect to see out of each of these individual lines. Obviously, like everything else, there's variation within the breeds, but the Germans, I think, do a very good job of producing consistency. You might not see the flashiest bird dog work out of those dogs, but you might. But one thing I think you see consistently more often in, whether it be poodle pointers, Drahthars, Kurtzars, Longhars, whatever, if they're coming out of a German testing program, you got that blood up close, you probably have a higher likelihood of finding a dog that can, and you've heard me use the term before, ball drive, where you don't have to have necessarily fresh game to get them excited to go play in high state of prey drive.
Right.
You know, and when we talk, the term retrieve drive, I find problematic sometime, because I think retrieving is a pretty complex behavior, and it takes, I like to think of it as like thing that we help our dogs become good retrievers prior to formal training through structured play. Right. And a lot of people do that very intuitively, and other people have trouble. So you might find a dog that you go throw that tennis ball for and he runs off on the other side of the field and plays keep away with you. That dog for a guy like Landon might be playing a retrieve game and bringing it right back to him within 10 or 15 reps.
Right.
And so that's understanding structured play, understanding how to make yourself somebody your dog wants to play with and bring that toy back to and share it with. So you got there with Harker. You did a good job with that stuff. We know you entered, you got in, you did your force fetch program. You got in with your local guys doing the HRC club. And we're lucky in our little corner of the world here that we have some very experienced high level, whether they be pros or amateurs.
Oh yeah.
And guys that are willing to share information and, bring young guys along and new guys along. And so you fell into the right crowd. You got, mentorship from those types of guys, and you're cruising through the ranks with Harker. You got your started done and your season done by 10 months of age. So you're out there doing setups and training on a regular basis. And let's talk about finished. You know, so you start your finished as a two-year-old, I'm assuming.
I think our first finished test, he was just over a year old.
Okay. So youngster starting.
Yeah, let's... And people listening, don't do that. I got caught up and I went for it and I paid for it because we failed. Pretty sure it was four tests in a row.
Okay.
I guess it would be, four tests in a row. And, but I got caught up in the hype and just excited and wanted him to get out there. And basically I wanted to see the test myself from the line.
Yeah. And you're having all the success. And number one, you're feeling pretty good about yourself. Everybody's telling you how good you and your dog are.
Right.
And here's what I'll tell you is, I would disagree. If you're feeling it and you're riding high, do it. Have fun. I think we put, you know, from when I watch these lab, and then this is not to pick on any of the lab guys, but they're so into their pass fail ratios that I think it takes when you're taking that 3-year-old dog or 2-year-old dog before you put them in a finished, and you know, and you've trained well enough and you know what you're looking at, and you're not putting your marginal dog in that you're not quite sure of yet. And number one, you're doing it for the first time. So that's the fun part.
Oh yeah.
If you're too sure you're going to pass based on your experience, your training skill, there's an element of fun that you lose because when you True. Fail, it crushes you because you're expecting to pass. There's something fun about smiling at the line, knowing you gave it your best shot, but also you're having fun with it.
That's true.
And it makes the wins when you do pass feel so much better, you right. know? So I would encourage anybody with their year-old dog that has gotten their season title under them, go out there and throw caution to the wind and have fun. Now, you know, now go back to the drawing board and keep training.
Yeah.
Don't get your feelings hurt so bad you don't go back and do it.
But walk back the truck and write down the notes that, you know, you need to work on.
But I'm not, for me, these games, man, there's, you know, we play them obviously because we want to genetically select for the right dogs. There's really important reasons to play these games.
Right.
But one of the most important reasons to play them is to have fun. And so go do it. I applaud you for doing that with your young dog. And so you got your four fails.
Yeah.
And so how to go after that?
Knock on wood, we hadn't failed a finished test since.
How many you got under your belt, you think, at this point?
I think it's like 14 in a row now.
That says a lot, right? So, yeah, I think you guys figured out the code. And so 14 of 18 ain't bad in any game you're playing. And so, for those that don't know an HRC, you get your finish test. That's an HRCH. That's a hunting retriever champion.
Right.
And now you're qualified to perpetually play the grand.
That's right.
And that is a whole different ball of wax.
That's another beast.
Yeah. And so what do you know what the pass fail percentage was like on the
this past grand? I think it was
pretty high.
I think it was like 22%.
Yeah.
Which sounds horrible, but it's pretty high. It's normally around like 17.5.
So that's a really high attrition rate because you're talking about dogs that are all capable of being hunting retriever champions.
Right.
But you know, these grand tests, from what I understand, and I've never been, they're complex land and water setups. And then you have an upland setup at the back.
Right.
You know, on the back end and with heavy steadiness requirements built for flushing dogs, by the way.
Yes.
So, I do want to touch on kind of that upland piece of HRC. But before we do, I want to talk about, you know, we've got a breed that's not a traditional retrieving breed.
Right.
We know it's capable. It's a versatile dog. Sure. And so it should be capable of doing this. For me, and where I've always struggled with my bird dogs in retrieval work is one thing I think that kind of separates you and I here is I've always started with them as bird dogs first. Right. So I've always, you know, done a lot of bird work early, worked on staunchness, steadiness, upland, quarter in the field. These dogs are very dependent on their noses.
Right.
And they're very independent. And so if we're starting with waterfowl in mind, I think you went the right direction, which is creating engagement early, having everything come through you, solid discipline, line manners, all those things are right. And you're allowing the dog to develop their visual acuity as a marking dog, which is extremely important in the retriever games.
Oh, yes.
And so for those that don't know, when you're running finish level, that's three marks.
Three marks.
And was it two blinds?
Just one.
Just one. So just three one. Marks and one blind in a normal series, whether it be on land or water.
That's correct.
It goes to show you how much I know. I don't even know how many blinds we got in there. So blinds, we know we've got a duck down somewhere. The handler knows the area it's in.
Right.
Dog has no clue. Handler has to send the dog out without the advantage of having triggered tray drive by watching that mark fall out of the sky, send them in hopefully in a relatively direct line.
Right.
And we were kind of discussing before we sat down to record, maybe some of the differences you see or what you would expect in an AKC hunt test, retriever hunt test versus an HRC, where maybe challenging the blind is not quite as important in the HRC. And what I mean by challenging the line is, you know exactly where the point is. And your job, whether you is just to keep that dog within the lines on the way to that blind. So if they cross over, hit a whistle, you got to send them back over the opposite shoulder, hopefully a straight line back, where in HRC you might allow them to carry a little more if the line's not perfect, and then get them to the blind.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the important in blind. HRC, the rule is to the line, to the blind, or to you.
Yeah.
So as long as your dog's doing one of those three things, you're fine.
I like that. I think that's much, and that it kind of gets to the heart of the HRC, which is a practical hunting dog.
Right.
You know, and so it still needs to be efficient. It still needs to hold the line. It still needs to get to the blind. It still needs to be obedient remotely. But these very technical lining skills are less important, or technical handling skills, maybe not quite as heavily emphasized. So I guess that's a bit in the weeds, but in order to accomplish that, and you know, leaning on this, what we talk about, visual acuity with your marking, I listen to a lot of retriever podcasts. I've read a lot of books. I've handled in some retriever hunt tests, never at the master or finished level.
Right.
I've always struggled with running a bunch of multiples with any of my dogs. And that, so that we discuss that, and that's something you do on a regular basis. So you, when you go to train daily, you're dealing with setups. Are you doing a lot of drills as well? Or are you mostly just doing setups?
If it's like, you know, early morning and I know I'm not going to get a ton of time in the afternoon, I might run a quick drill in the morning and, you know, something in the afternoon, or I might run a full setup in the afternoon and come home. If I see something, you know, let's say for instance, he didn't square a hill. And by squaring a hill, I mean, you know, he didn't fade downhill with the slope and he didn't just turn and go uphill and cut the slope all the way out. He followed that, say, 45 degree angle across that hill and held that line. So if he was a little off on that, I might go home and do like a wagon wheel drill on a hill and send him to each one and work on that.
I like that. I think, you know, it, so we're talking concepts now, retriever concepts, you know? And so if we're sending a dog on a line on a hill, we can expect that dog to fade offline on the downhill direction if they're just following nature.
Right.
We usually combat that by pushing them back uphill, and then some dogs will want to square up and run uphill.
Right. A good finished dog that's got some test under its belt will typically square, but I mean, we just come out of summer, so we hadn't done that a ton.
Yeah.
So I'm preparing for the grand because you never know what you're going to see at the grand.
Sure.
So.
Well, and so that's, but I guess essentially what I'm getting at is, here we are. This is the major difference. Playing a retriever game not only requires visual acuity, it requires handle in such a way that the dog is extremely dependent on the handler for direction.
That's right.
We don't want you to run out there and just figure it out on your own. And that, when we think of questing dogs, that's what we want from them.
Right.
You know, and when we think of bird dogs first.
Right.
That's kind of where we start. And I think if we want to make that great waterfowl dog first, and we're very serious about it, getting to the point where we can direct that dog that way, where we're saying, hey, don't use your nose, turn your brain off, and do what I'm telling you to right now. And if you do that, there's a reward at the end of that.
Yeah. that pot of gold at the end of that rainbow.
Yeah. I think to me, that's like a struggle for pointing dogs. My labs are like, what do you want me to do, boss?
Right.
You know, but most of my bird dogs are like, please, for the love of God, just let me go figure it out on my own. I'd much rather do it that way. When I watch Harker, I think I see a really good balance of a dog that's very willing to give himself to you.
Yeah. Start that way.
But. Well, and he's,
but I mean, that's, I mean, like you said, it's a bird dog.
Yeah.
So to get them to understand, to turn that instinct completely off.
Sure.
From the word back.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes some time.
And that's, so I'm preparing for the Invitational right now with a dog that I love dearly, is not And this isn't fair because, you know, this dog was started as a bird dog and we worked towards a UT, mm-hmm. which does require a mark.
Right.
But it's a very simple open water, what you would consider a puppy mark.
Okay.
For a retriever.
Okay.
Right. It's got some big water sometimes. So mm-hmm. that could be intimidating to a young dog or a pointing dog that's sure. not very familiar with their water work. But that's the only mark outside of what they're going to see in the field and shot birds that they're going to be asked to deal with. And so when we move to the Invitational, and this is kind of, I think anybody listening to this that plays NAVDA will recognize this. Most of us don't start showing our dogs any memory work or multiple marks until we're preparing for the Invitational. So now got a 2-3-year-old dog that's never had to pick up a double in its entire life.
Right.
And we're trying to teach it to have a memory.
Right.
And I think, you know, listening to you and looking at the success you've had with Harker, I think there's a very good chance we could have an effect on a younger dog in a way that would be very helpful if we started that kind of work earlier.
Oh yeah.
And to that exact point, the first time most of our dogs are asked to line a blind are after they've gotten their utility test done.
Okay.
Because in the utility test, we have our duck search and right. we need our dog to operate independently on water in order to go out and satisfy the requirements for that duck search, which are, we don't care if you come back with your duck, but you got to go look hard and expand your search pattern for 10 minutes. That is directly contradictory to line up at my side and take a straight line across water.
Right.
And so much so that when we, you know, I do teach my dogs to turn and go, my dogs that are going to Invitational work. So I do remote casting work, but I rarely do any direction except back.
Okay.
Because it's not required for the Invitational. Get across the water, then break down and hunt is okay. what we want, right? Yeah. So, but if I start teaching you overs and I'm taking a dog that's never been taught to have a bunch of momentum mm-hmm. and I'm robbing them of their momentum when I stop breaking them down to handle more technically. So I do teach them go over this shoulder or go over that shoulder. And hopefully with that, I can get some drift in whatever direction I want.
Right.
But that's as much directional casting as I'm normally doing with an Invitational dog. And I wonder, had I started aiming at an HRC finish test before I ever even took a dog and put it in a UT, would I have an advantage moving forward? And so I know you've got designs on maybe running a UT in the spring. Is that correct?
That's the plan.
Okay.
That's the plan. Hopefully, you know, I'll be coming right out of hunting season, guiding at the plantation.
Sure.
And then roll right into a UT test and hopefully he'll just, well, one, hopefully we can get into it because they fill up so fast.
Yeah.
And then two, hopefully, you know, coming right out of hunting season, he'll stomp it.
Yeah, they do fill up fast, but what I'll tell you, they fill up fast, but they almost always have scratches.
Oh, really?
So get on that waiting list.
Okay.
Everybody's like, okay, I'm gonna be ready for that UT in the spring, and then they get intimidated at the end. So the field work component is that's probably the one you feel like is your mountain to climb, steady wing shot and fall retrieve. But I think you're pretty much not far from there already.
Oh yeah, I mean, little tune up and.
Now, duck search. Have you ever just done a duck search with Harker yet?
Just that one time that we were talking about earlier today.
And just refresh my memory for everybody listening. How did that go?
It went pretty good. He found 4 ducks in 6 minutes. But after that, I was like, oh, that's cool. And they're like, hey, you got 4 more minutes. And I'm like, I don't think I want to lie to my dog because I'm in the retriever world. And if I send him out and he don't get something, his feelings are going to be hurt.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we never want.
That's that, I don't know,
I guess
bubble or balloon where it's, you push on one side and there's a result going to come out on the other.
Yeah. I struggled with that a lot getting started in NAVDA because I came with that mentality. I had not played hunt test or field trial games, but I'd spent a lot of time around retriever guys,
sure.
And that was a big deal. Like you're never going to just handle your dog for the sake of handling your dog because
right.
you're lying to him.
Right.
And it's an interesting dynamic because on the duck search, we're asking for the independence. So when you step to the line, just in training on that duck search and you send Harker out, how did it feel? What do you think Harker had in his brain? Am I going for a blind and I just need to line it and then I get an odor and break down?
I think so, because the best I can remember, it was with Foothills. Yeah. So it's like this swamp way
down.
That's
a tough swamp. Yeah. That's a really
and
hard
he
swamp.
He basically went from where you come down the trail and you start right there at the edge. I mean, he basically went to the other side of the swamp and just looked at me.
Yeah.
And I was like, I just gave him an over and he just went to hunting. So.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't think that would hurt you in a test if your dog.
Oh, really?
No, because as long as he expands and looks, I think if he goes out on a straight line first and you basically give him even if you were maybe give him a toot, toot, toot with a little bit of this, I don't think that would be in any way a violation of the NAVDA rule set as long as when he goes to hunting, he doesn't come out of it.
Okay.
I think if he goes really handler dependent, the fact that he didn't pop going out, I think would play to your advantage. So as long as he goes all the way out and across and then's like, do you want me to break down and hunt, boss? What do you want me to do out here?
Yeah.
I think you're okay. But that's where I worry about, you know, especially if you have ambitions of continuing on your technical retrieval work. Now, if you got your HRCH and said, okay, now I'm just going to play NAVDA until I get my UT, I'm going to work on my duck search. I think that you're essentially loosening up all the blind work you've done before.
Right.
Right. It's saying, okay, now you've always been under control, under extreme amounts of control, because not only am I sending you in a straight line, I'm going to do this, you know, multiple times in a test, you know, land series and water series, you're going to have two blinds.
Right.
And you're always going to depend on me for direction.
Right.
So we do that over and over and over again for a few years. And then I say, okay, swim out there. You don't have to pay attention to me anymore. Just go have fun, man. Yeah. Find your bird. You know, Andy's really good at it, obviously, because he found four birds in how many minutes?
Six.
6 minutes. So yeah, we still have essentially maybe 4 minutes of clock to fill.
Right.
And so it's interesting. And that's what I want to explore is like, if it, you know, I think if I were to have another serious, versatile dog that I think was capable, had the ball drive off the bat,
right,
and I wanted to play both games, I think it still makes sense to start in the waterfowl direction. Because if it's a good bird dog, it will always be a good bird dog, and it will always be capable. I don't think field work for a bird dog requires the level of neuroplasticity that technical handling and marking and memory require. And we talked a little bit about the fact that you really feel like you shifted gears in your finished work when you started playing on more technical water.
Absolutely.
You know, so expand on that for me a little bit to explain to the folks what tech water is.
So tech water is going to be, you know, basically a pond, but it's going to have fingers, islands, L-shaped peninsulas, T peninsulas. I mean, any power poles that are stuck down in the mud, logs laying on the side, any little, like a pipe, any little thing that can just throw your dog's mind haywire.
And the idea being, hey, a mark falls and a straight line is a straight line, regardless of what the obstacle in front of you is.
Right.
And so you may, and hey, I need you to keep your feet wet too.
Exactly.
Right. So it's like, you know, if the straight line between you and wherever that bumper fell is open water, but very close to that is land, most dogs are going to want to get on land and run because it's a more efficient means of communication.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or a more efficient means of transportation.
Right.
The straight line being important, what we do in a retriever game is teach our dogs, hey, stay off that water, stay off that land, stay in the water, and stay off that line. And that's a big important thing in a retriever test, not nearly as important in NAVDA. They don't care how the dog goes about, whether they stay wet or get dry, just get either find a bird or look hard for it.
Okay.
And so getting to that finished level, having the ability to use tech water, I think it makes everything a concept. And it's, hey, does it make more sense for me? And some dogs, you'll see this, their line will include maybe a peninsula or a piece of land where they have to exit and then re-enter. And they're so used to being de-cheated
right,
that maybe they never want to challenge that land in the first place. And so what happens is, over the course of time and using tech water, we get the opportunity to get the dog confident just staying online.
Oh yeah.
And on the way, especially on the way to their marks.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really valuable. But then again, you know, if we break that pattern, we've been doing that for so long and we want to go back and run a UT, we got to get those boogers out of that dog's head.
Right.
You
right.
know, and
open
so,
them up.
Yeah. Open them up. So it's, I think contextually, I think you can make it work.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
really excited to see how Harker does in your UT, especially in your duck search. But I bet you could do a duck search once a month with a good dog between now and your UT, and contextually, especially if you get to use that same piece of water, that's going to make sense to him and he's going to understand what you're asking him. And then you go to your next HRC test and it never even enters his mind that it's going to be a problem.
Right.
And so that's why I guess all of this conversation, guys, for those that are listening, what I've been exploring in my head is what's the right way to take this. And I think after watching Landon and Harker, I think that finding an HRC club, finding an AKC hunt test club that's getting serious about it and really focusing on your technical retriever skills first is the way to go, because the bird dog will always be in there. The
Absolutely.
Dog that wants to hunt will always be in there.
I think so.
So disadvantages. Do you ever felt like having a wire hair was a disadvantage when you went to the line, you went to a test, you watch other people train?
Probably, I think it was my second time I ran a finish test. It was down in Sherall at Cooper Black.
Yeah.
And went out there, ran the water series, and he stomped it. And it was like the blind there was, it was down the shore, but it was very iffy if it was a land or water blind. They said it was a water blind. So, I mean, basically, if his toes were wet, you were fine.
Yeah.
And he crushed the water. We go up the hill and ran a land test and goes out there, picks up his middle bird and left-hand bird clean, ran a great blind, or excuse me, picked up left bird and middle bird, sent him on the right bird, and it was down a big hill and up. And when he got to the top of that hill, it was kind of like a false front. But once he crests that hill, it's just a huge field. Well, he went into hunt mode, like
yeah.
straight bird dogging it.
Had he been doing bird dog like any upland
yeah,
hunting prior to that?
Yeah. yeah. So yeah. I play with fire a lot. So
I think, you know, I think that could probably happen even with a lab guy that's a serious bird hunter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's like, you know, the look. And
oh,
it's
yeah.
like when a bird dog enters a field that looks birdie, I think they're always gonna go, oh
yeah,
I'm hunting.
Because
you know,
there was a tree and there's a road that went behind the tree, and he got to that road bed.
Yeah.
And when I saw him hit that road bed, it was like another gear and he was just gone.
Yeah.
So I stopped, like blew a whistle for yep. him to stop, and tweeted him in, and he came down the road and picked up the bird and came back.
Yeah, so you got out clean, but he was thinking in his head,
oh,
his
yeah.
bird hunting.
But he was just, I'm bird hunting today.
Well, and I mean, but that goes to show too, man. You had the opportunity right then, tweet, hey, bud, change gears. And
well,
he
yeah.
did it for you.
That's
and
true.
And so, you know, and so, I think it's easier to loosen it up once it's tight than it is to tighten it up when it's loose.
Right.
And I am and everybody that's ever listened to this show knows I am a fast and loose, get them started way loose.
Right.
So I think there's a lot for me to take away from this conversation. I could definitely see starting my next versatile dog much more deeply in technical waterfowl work.
Sure.
If you ever want to play that way.
Oh yeah.
And so for those of you guys, hopefully you got that from that conversation. If you're getting that poodle pointer, if you're getting that wire hair, if you're getting that short hair, if you're getting that long har, whatever, any of the other breeds. And I would say, like, if you're serious about being waterfowl first, I think for me it would be the German dogs out of the German systems, as close up as you're going to get.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
and I say that strictly because of ball drive.
Right.
I think that's what you're going to get. And I think that's an important piece of having a retriever.
Oh, yeah.
And so all that said, you're playing upland stuff too.
Yeah.
So HRC has an upland component.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about it a bit. I think yeah, I think both you and I agree that compared to our other bird dog games out there, it's relatively rudimentary.
Right.
It's kind of a check in the box for those guys. And that's not to pick on HRC. It's just it's the hunting retriever club. It's not the bird dog
right.
that also retrieves club.
And it's driven just for, you know, the flushers, the labs and cockers.
Boykins are big. Boykins, big into it.
Oh, yeah.
And so, and I mean, for me personally, I think HRC personally, the spirit of the game is the best thing we have access to of anything.
Like Colt, he's my best friend, and I met him through HRC. I mean,
but it's
just a family.
Well, and really what I'm getting at is that it was one of, you know, all the retriever hunt test games kind of came about around the same time. Mm-hmm. But HRC always stayed true, and I'm sure NARA did too to some degree. I think most people agree that AKC hunt test game is a technical retrieving game.
It is.
And they want to be that way. There's nothing wrong with being that way. HRC has always said for hunters by hunters.
Right.
And it's about a practical hunting dog to some degree. And I think that's really cool. And so I think having that upland component makes it that much cooler.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's in the rule book. I mean,
yeah.
An HRCH is a desirable hunting companion you want to hunt with you and your friends.
Yeah. And so for that reason, I like it. But also for that reason, I would love to see them get more serious about their upland. And I think they're thinking about it. I think they're trying. They've instituted a new upland champion title.
Right.
I care more about upland than I do waterfowl.
Right.
And so I love my labs and I love them in the uplands. And so I would really love to go have access to a test that took the upland series as seriously as they take their waterfowl series.
Right.
And again, that's not to pick on them. And I'll still run all their upland tests and be very proud when we pass and feel like crap when we fail.
Right. Cause
it's possible. It's certainly possible.
Been there too.
And so with that said, cause I'm talking from the perspective of my lab, this is a game really designed for flushing dogs and you're playing it with a pointing dog.
Yeah.
How does that look?
When I started, it was pretty sketchy. you know, just him locking up on point and just not understanding, you know, it's okay when I say your name, you can release and get that bird in the air.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of entrapments starting off.
So an entrapment is when a bird dog grabs a bird on the ground. And I'm going to get into this a lot. I'm going to stop you here a lot of times because I want people to hear this. How did you teach Harker to point?
I didn't. He just naturally pointed.
So for everyone out there listening, We focus so much on teaching our bird dogs to point. And here we have this dog that we want to flush, and it's a struggle to get him to flush. When we let him flush, he gets a lot of entrapments.
Right.
Did that ever hurt his pointing?
No.
There you go, guys. This is a guy that playing a game designed for flushers, it honestly kind of gets in the way that his dog points. He doesn't care about his point
right.
as much as maybe the rest of us listening to this thing would. And we all freak out when our bird dogs catch a bird on the ground because we're like, it's going to ruin him for life.
Right.
And here we go with Harker, who always has too much point, and we wish he would flush better.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. I mean, for the games, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even at the plantation, I mean, he's not perfect.
So no dog's perfect, number one, but let's talk about the plantation. When you say plantation, what are you talking about?
I'm a guide at George High Plantation. So we, you know, have our seasonal hunts during quail season from October to March.
Awesome. So for those not from our neck of the woods, George High is a really very nice bird hunting plantation with a great reputation.
Oh, yeah.
Down east. We're in Clinton.
Between Clinton and Roseboro.
Gotcha. It's a place where if you want to have a good preserve experience in the state of North Carolina, it's one of the very cream of the crop spots.
I mean, we're not put and take, so
yeah.
You know, we do schedule releases throughout the season.
Good. And so you got quality birds.
Absolutely.
So on a normal day's hunt, when you say Harker's not perfect, still, though, he's going out and pointing his birds and giving you opportunities to kill.
Oh, yeah.
Good. And clean pointing work.
Oh, yeah.
And on the weekends, you're running out, running an HRC test, and flushing your birds with him.
Right.
And sometimes he's entrapping them.
Uh-huh.
and he still goes out and it's an honest bird dog.
Honest bird dog.
On your preserve guiding days.
Yep. He makes me, you know, if certain sections have like big ditches and water in them and just nasty black mud, you know, that's down east.
Yeah.
And I don't want to cross that ditch. So if I can like, I mean, toot my own horn and show off with Harker, I just send him on a back and I handle him all the way to that bird, or half the time he's already marked it. I'm just getting him, you know, a third or two thirds of the way there and he finds it.
Yeah.
And you know, those people haven't, my clients have no idea why I'm raising my hands in the air and blowing a whistle, but they're just happy their bird came back.
Well, and that's, and so that's on a retrieve, but also I'm assuming like, you know, you mark a bird down, you get a covey flush.
Oh yeah.
You go out and you mark a bird down and you can't get them on the right side of the wind unless you do a little handling. Have you ever found yourself in that situation?
Oh yeah.
You know, so from
get them in a big set of cattails and just let them roll and find it.
I mean, from a practical standpoint, and I'm kind of leading up to something here, you know, having all that technical handling ability in the uplands is an advantage.
Oh yeah.
In Europe, it's been a long tradition that they ask their pointing dogs to flush.
Right.
They also ask them to be steady after post flush. So they'll go in, right. We call it, if you're talking continental Europe, probably more in the southern continental tradition. So I'm thinking Italy, Spain, France, you know, and this is traditionally because they're all running the same field trials.
Right.
But in France, they call it a coulée. So dog goes on point. If it's partridge running, the dog is expected to hold the bird on the ground, but may move on point. Once the handler gets there, the dog is expected to move with the handler to the point of the flush, stop to flush, then make the retrieve on command.
Right.
And that's the coulée. If you watch the Brits run their HPR trials, which is the hunt point retrieve trials, those dogs will establish point, handler moves up, releases the dog to flush. Most of the ones I've seen will have the dog sitting to flush.
Right.
Like a spaniel would. And then I've also seen that in some of the more northern continental European testing and trialing deals. So,
right. But
very often over there, they're asking their bird dogs to flush the bird and then remain steady beyond the flush. That's exactly what Harker's doing in the HRC.
Yes.
And he's sitting to flush, you said.
Yeah,
he's sitting to flush. Yeah, and I think that distinction makes sense to me because it's a different static position in a sequence. So it's not the same as being staunch on point. You can flush the bird, but as soon as that bird flushes, you must always sit.
Right.
And I'd like for you to wait for me to do it on quote unquote command. I would say we're doing it more of a release. We're letting him know it's okay to get that bird in the air at this point.
Yes.
And so there's a lot to talk about there. And I think that's a really interesting subject is using our pointing dogs to flush our game. And there are a lot of people with smoke coming out of their ears listening to this right now because I would be one of them traditionally. I remember watching one guy do it one day and thought it was really cool when I was a kid, but having played field trials and things like that, I want my dogs for the most part to stop on first odor, not move until I ask them to. And if I ask for relocation work, I want them to do it very cautiously.
Right.
And I think that's what most of us with bird dogs in this country do. But it's important to know that it's very common in the rest of the world and in other kind of, you know, subcultures to use your pointing dogs to flush your game. And there are many times in practical hunting scenarios where that would come in handy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where you're in that big cat, you got a running pheasant and the cattails, and I just want to release you to get that rascal in the air because we can't keep tracking it and trailing it. Or we got any bird somewhere that's just hard for me to get to. I've got to run in on woodcock that's buried in, you know, in a big briar patch. It'd be so much easier for me to just send my dog in there and let him put that bird in the air. And I just say that. You know, maybe one day we'll do another podcast where we really break that down technically and talk about the best way to go about doing that. But for now, I think it's important for folks to know that, hey, like it's common other people to do it. Yeah.
And
it's
okay.
And if you're going to play HRC, it's going to have to be that way because the dog has to flush the bird.
Right.
And so it's possible for you to take your dog through a UH in the HRC and to go to the Grand and play the Upland Series, but your dog's going to have to flush that bird. So if you're going to play this game with your versatile pointing dog, that's going to be a part of it. So know it going into it. And then, you know, in that same vein, you are last year's St. Hubert Trial champion, which is
which was a big surprise.
Well, and you know, I love that game. I guess you would say I'm probably the leading proponent of that game in this country.
Right.
I think it's wonderful. And I judged you and Harker last year.
Right.
And I will tell you why you won was because of the technical prowess. Like, it was just too hard to watch. I can't even remember the specific scenario. I remember the picture perfectly.
Oh, I'll remember it.
So I remember we ended up, we didn't have fine before we got to that covey, did we?
Or
did
yeah, we? He had okay. an entrapment.
Oh, that's right.
Because he ran around the corner and then checked back and then he started flagging and then went on point.
That's right.
But there was a piece of, like in the corner of that field, there was a bunch of Milo that was laid over.
Yeah.
And that bird was tucked underneath there. So when I tried to flush it, the bird turned around and flew at his face.
And he
caught
just,
it. He just caught it.
That's right. So, yeah. So last year's trial, we didn't have a trialer's class or a hunting class. So everything was treated as a hunting class. And for a bird dog to catch a bird in the air, I got no problem with. And even if a hunting dog were to trap one on the ground, I'm really not going to hold that against them if we're dealing in pen-raised birds, because I want to know what right. I'm looking for a skilled hunting dog. And what the steadiness after the flush, for all intents and purposes, is there for safety
right.
and for marking right. ability. So I'm not worried about, in the hunter's class, that at all. So if that dog even, I want them to point and indicate, but I'm well aware, especially because I came to this through the European tradition, that a dog can challenge a bird on the ground, but the bird should get out of town. If it doesn't, right. it's not acting as if a wild bird would.
Right.
So we had that scenario, but the one that got you the win came next. And I'll let you explain that to everybody, because you probably got a better memory than I do.
So we went up to the hill to the left, and Harker's quartering through some pretty heavy stuff, and he got over into some like blown down Milo, and he flagged,
yeah,
and then he went on point. So I started walking up to him, and then he moved and started flagging, and he went on point again. And at that point, I turned and looked at you, and I was like, you know, is that okay? And you're like, just keep on hunting.
Yeah.
So from then on, like, I walked up to Harker's shoulder, and I looked in front of him. There was a covey, 7 chucker and 1 covey sitting just right there. And I looked at you, and I was like, it's a covey. And he's like, you said just do what you got to do. Make your hunt. And so I kicked, and all 7 of them went flying, and I shot the one on the left, and I looked at Harker after I shot, because I saw my bird going down to the left, and Harker was steady right beside me, but he was watching the other 6 fly off into the woods.
That's right.
And I was like, dang, he didn't mark that bird. Like, I know he didn't mark that bird. And I looked at you, and I said, you know, you said make your retrieve. And I said, okay. So the only way I knew how to do it was run a blind. So I said, Harker, no. Like, note him off the birds that went into the woods. He healed to my left, and I sent him on back. And, like, I think I handled 1 cast, like, 40 yards, and then he picked it up and brought it back.
Yeah. That's hard to beat when you're talking. And that was, to me, that's the beautiful thing about St. Hubert, is I don't care how you accomplish it.
Right.
Is it efficient? Is it effective? Is it cool? Like, there was a real cool factor. Nobody else was handling on a retrieve that way.
Right.
But more than anything, it's a very practical way to make a retrieve.
It was.
You know, and so, that earned you the championship. And I'm excited to see you guys out there again this year.
Oh, yeah. We'll be there.
And it's going to be, you know, and obviously not everybody's going to find themselves in a situation for those kind of beautiful blind retrieves, but it certainly is some icing on the cake to be able to show off. So, you know, I guess exalting the virtues. So you've got a dog that you started as a basically a retriever first and foremost.
Right.
Ran him through as pretty extensive a retriever lifestyle as possible before you really even, I mean, and you paralleled some bird dog work with that.
Sure.
But I would say, did you have your finish title last year when you ran St. Hubert Cup?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Had you done any other, have you played any like chucker challenges or anything?
No, that was our first bird dog field trial ever.
Bird dog anything.
Yeah.
So there you go. You're starting with a basic, you know, a dog that has only been a retriever, played with birds, and you come out and win that deal. This year, right. You're going to play again.
Mm-hmm.
You'll probably, I think, trialer's class is what you're aiming
at. Trialer's class, yes.
So that's completely steady dog.
Right.
And so I'm excited to see you out there, and you're going to be competing with master hunters, probably some versatile champions, some UTs, probably some field trial winners. And right. I don't think Harker is going to have any disadvantage whatsoever based on the fact that he is a retriever first, or started life as a retriever first. And right. so if you guys hadn't figured out, that's what I'm hammering home. You want your versatile dog to be a waterfowl dog primarily, make them a waterfowl dog primarily, and then let them be a bird dog.
Yeah.
Have fun with your bird dog work. I think the amount of steadiness and the amount of handle that a retriever gets is going to be a completely natural transition when you're asking for steadiness in the field.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think you've done it in such a way that you guys are going to keep winning going forward.
I hope so.
I think Harker's a great dog. I hope to see some puppies out of him on the ground around, you know, in the future. I think he's very worthy of being a stud dog in this country.
Yeah, we've got a good litter planned for this fall. Tracy Stubbs, the grand chairman of the grand,
okay.
Him and one of his friends have a wire hair down in Alabama.
Wow. Well,
that's a planned litter that, and I haven't seen her work, but other than videos and pictures and all that.
Are they
but,
playing HRC with her?
No.
Okay.
She's just a plantation dog.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well,
but she's a hammer.
Nice.
From the videos I've seen.
Well, hopefully we see more of that out there. And I think HRC is a viable testing tool for a versatile dog. Again, I maybe one day, and I hope that they think of their upland side as being more important than they maybe see it right now, because that would be the perfect test, in my opinion, is to be able to have a real waterfowl test and a real upland test and mixed in one. And I'm not picking on NAVDA, but we're taking waterfowl. I think it's a very practical way to look at waterfowl, mm-hmm. but it's not the same as having a technical retriever.
Right.
And so we're going to the grand in the fall. You've been twice already.
Twice already.
How far have we made it last two times?
The first time, which was my first grand, Harker was the first ever wire hair to compete at the grand.
That's something serious.
We made it to the third series. Last year we made it to the fifth, and he flushes bird really well. Shirker was flying out and just pulled a 180 and come right back over his head. And when that bird flew back over his head, the chase was on.
Like, yeah.
I mean, you can blow a whistle.
Yeah.
They won't tell you a number how many whistles, yeah. but like two whistles, that's really pushing it.
Yeah. But he was already.
But he was like full tilt. And I was just like, tweet here. We're out.
So. Well, and then so spring of the year, how far did you get in the fall? I'm sorry.
The fall was to the third series.
To the third. And how far did you make it in the spring?
The fifth.
So,
the
okay. That was your, that
the
was
last
your,
series.
Okay. Gotcha. And so this fall's coming up and you're heading to
Paducah, Kentucky.
All right. Well, we'll be rooting for you, bud.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. I really appreciate you coming in. I Absolutely. Enjoyed this conversation immensely.
Absolutely.
And hopefully folks out there got something out of it. If you're a duck guy, goose guy first, don't be afraid to be a duck guy, goose guy first with your versatile dog.
Exactly.
All right. We'll see you guys later. Thanks for listening. And
hey, listeners, Nick Larson here, host of the Birdshot Podcast. As fans of this show, you may be interested in the conversations on the Birdshot Podcast, where we discuss all things upland hunting, from upland birds and their habitat and conservation to the shotguns, bird dogs, and gear used to pursue them. Whether you're a seasoned upland hunter or just getting started and wanting to learn more, I interview a wide range of guests, each with their own unique perspective and valuable experience to share. If you're on the hunt for more upland hunting conversation, please consider subscribing to the Birdshot Podcast today.